Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Today we have a subject matter that we don't often have the occasion to discuss on the air, but I found it so intriguing, this story, this publication, the book, The Passerby, that I called up Thomas Ray Crowell and said, I need to know if we can have you a guest on the show, because The Passerby is based on real-life information. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Donna. Thanks for having me.
This has really been a fascinating story, and you've got some interesting things to share, but I want to let people know about you, a little bit about you and your background. You have done writing before. You have published some other books on selling and how to be successful and how salespeople can rob people blind, but you had a novel you did, which is called Scattered Harvest, and then you did an award-winning screenplay adaptation to that story. You have been a life member of the American Association of Professional Hypnotherapists and a life fellow of the American Psychotherapy Association. You're a man that has so many various interests, but I want you to give us the lowdown on how you got involved in a cold case murder that you later have written about called The Passerby.
Okay, now some of your listeners will believe this, others will say, oh, no, that's not right. But I was in a cemetery, and I was researching for a murder of a woman that's about 23, 24 years old. She got murdered, and for some reason I looked across the gravel road, and there was this little girl's grave. And I turned to my publicist, because I have relatives buried in this graveyard. It's out in the country. Mm-hmm. And I said, I wonder what that little girl died of. She said, well, what do you care for, boss? She said, a lot of little kids die. And I said, no, there's something here. And I asked a farmer, and he told me she drowned in a bathtub. And from there, I went home, I went to bed, and about 11:11, and those are magic numbers to me, I wake mm-hmm. up, and for about 2 or 3 days, 11:11 at night, 1:11 in the morning, I'm waking up. So I'm a person that believes in angels. I believe in telepathy. I believe that minds can talk to minds. My psychology background, I've always been fascinated by that. But I do believe that there's some people, all people probably, that have ESP, but some of them actually know how to work it.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there on, I gave it a week. And I said to Patty, all right, I want you, we're going to go to the library and try to bring up some old newspaper and find out what this little girl died from. Because I was told she drowned in a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, started almost a three-year investigation.
Wow.
And the murder was pinned on, it even took me by phone over to London, in another little town in England, I can't think of the name of it. Because they originally had pinned it on a bloke from England.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just before we went on the air, I had talked to you for just a split second, hardly any time. You said, oh, something just happened, Donna. What was it that occurred today?
Oh, this is really far out, because I was sitting in the back of my office doing some research on a new book that I'm writing about this soldier in the Civil War, and I found out, my publicist told me, well, look there, come up here, boss. She says, on the internet, there's WNDU, that's a major station out of South Bend, Indiana, and they're talking about the passerby holding a book up and say, Thomas Crowell wrote this book in fiction, but new witnesses have come forward, and we are responsible for working with them on getting this into the hands of the state police.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Now,
and wait, and there's more. She comes back, and I'm reading, I says, look at this, Patty. I says, I'm on an exact page, 11, November 11th, 11-11, about this soldier that I'm writing this next book. And she says, I wanted to tell you about that, too. One of your relatives is buried in the same graveyard as this soldier that you're writing this book on in Ohio. I says, you get out of here.
Wow.
So there it is. I'm on a new story. I've been on it for about a month or so now.
Well, let's go back to the passerby. Here you are. It took you 3 years of investigation, and that's what this book is about. In fact, when you open up the book, there is an outline. It's a map. It's your notes. It's you're drawing diagrams, much the way someone that is a detective would want to do. Because when you're doing an investigation, there, and correct me if I'm wrong with this, but little tiny details that maybe other people would ignore, all of these little things are like pieces of a puzzle. And the little girl had been killed how long ago?
23 years ago.
23 years
today.
Ago. And someone, you know, there's a very, very well-known show about cold case files. And to think that you walked in to a cemetery, you're spurred with curiosity. Someone on the other side, really, maybe it's a little girl, who's really wanting to have a resolution to this. Because those on the other side have no time or space, as we do. And to be able to have this resolved, when you started into this, what was it that kept you going with it? Why, you know, so many people would say that was 23 years old. This is, there's all just this bit of information, that bit of information. You bring out so many things about this community in this book. And then to have this happen today, where someone calls and or, you know, your assistant says, look, your book is being promoted, and these people are coming forth as witnesses after 23 years. What kept you going on this?
Okay, this is going to be, to some people, creepy, but where the little girl was murdered, when we was researching, my publicist, I told her, I says, go to the land office of all the plat surveys in this county and find out if there's a house across the street from the murder scene. I said, I got a feeling there's a house there, and I think that he was hiding in there, looking, watching. She come back, and she said, she calls me boss. She said, boss, she said, it's more than that. She said there was a house there. They tore it down shortly after the murder, but the murder house itself was lived in by none other than your great-great-grandfather and grandmother.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, this is just, I mean, this is incredible.
It is.
You know, how your relatives in this part of the country, in this small town, to find out all of these little details. It's like somebody on the other side is saying, hey, you're going to get some genealogy into this while you're at it, and this has to be solved. It needs to be this person's life, this girl that was murdered. We need to have it solved so that there can be peace here.
Donna, and I believe, I really truly believe it's divine intervention, because I was guided on this. And in fact, one of the calls on the map, which I consider so important, I put it in the front and the back, and I didn't have it done professionally. That's the scribbling that I put down.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a person on the phone that somebody gave me a tip on that was supposed to be a policeman. And he told me he wasn't a policeman, and I said, well, I'm sorry, you know, because he's in law enforcement now that I called you. I says, I didn't want to waste anybody's time. He said, wait a minute before you hang up. I'll tell you what I was the first fireman on the scene. I said, get out of here. I says, tell me what happened. And he told me exactly when he got there, the little girl was still in the bathtub, face up, the wrong end of the tub, and nobody came on the scene. Nobody interviewed him. He told me that was it. He's a key witness.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Your first chapter starts out with these words: in our imagination, catastrophes don't happen in small-town America. We associate insanity and cruelty with big cities. But we've learned to see, those of us with long memories, that villages decay and the social fabric rots. What a picture that paints. That is, your use of words is just absolutely amazing. And when, you know, here you are, you're curious, you start interviewing people, and this town hadn't grown at all since the death of this girl.
No, it got smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as those words, I believe, in fact, I was just reading on Uncle Tom's Cabin, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and,
mm-hmm.
I never thought of this before, but somebody told her they liked the way she wrote the story, and by no means am I comparing myself with her. That's a different period. That's over 140 years ago. But she said she was guided to write what she wrote. I think I was guided to write what I wrote.
Well, I think you were very much guided to be the investigator.
Right.
And being an investigator, when you've done your previous writings, did you have that same kind of patterning? Did you go through historical materials and put a lot of details together before you did your final write?
Well, the strange thing about that, Donna, is when I wrote Scattered Harvest, I researched it for like 6 years.
Oh, my.
And then it took me another 5 years to finish the book. This book took me 2.5, almost 3 years to investigate. I started writing a book. It was less than a year. And the last, and this is something only you know, I won't tell anybody and on the radio, TV, or anywhere how it ends, because that's a unique
ending. No. I'm not gonna do that.
But I wrote the ending of this book. In fact, one of my friends says, well, how is this going to end? I said, I don't know. I wrote it in 30 minutes.
Wow.
I couldn't write. I was thinking so fast I could hardly keep up with it because I don't use a computer to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a longhand writer.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that. Now, one of the first things that you recognized immediately, and it was not brought up when this young girl was murdered, is that she had been molested.
Yes.
And in that time, when you think of it 24 years ago, to use the words child molestation, that was very rarely ever talked about. It's only been, I think, in the past 10 years, and I could be wrong in my evaluation, that people have become more vocal about it. They have become more open to a degree, not totally,
right. But
they've become more open in discussing it. In fact, that often is what people will look for right off the bat. Now, 24 years ago, they didn't have a forensic pathologist to evaluate a lot of things like they do today. When this young girl was killed, what evaluations did they make with the body? Because from your research, it was really almost non-existent. Am I remembering correctly?
Yes. Well, actually, they put in a paper that the person went in there, the passerby, to save her. And actually, they said he definitely wasn't a suspect. But I found out just the opposite by rereading the paper. They made that statement before they even got the autopsy. In the autopsy, this little girl was molested post-mortem. She was dead when she was raped.
Hmm.
It's a terrible thing. She comes in my mind. It's the saddest times when she comes in real strong. I just get so sad. And it's not because of this little girl. I'm no relative of her. I just think that this is a representation of little girls and little boys all over the country, the world, getting snatched, and you never know what happened to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just felt compelled to write this story.
And it really, really was very, very hard on the family. There was just, she didn't have a big family, and it was just very, very difficult. Now, you bring out something about the human nature of people and how they often will not come forth with information. It's like if you don't ask, you don't get.
You're right.
So what was your biggest frustration when you were doing this research and when you were doing the investigation, because you worked on this for 3 years.
Right.
What was your biggest frustration with the case?
Okay, I knew from my sales background and talking and communicating with people, it's just anybody that's ever went to grade school knows, or high school, if you sit down with a friend or you meet somebody in the airport, they'll only share if you share. If you don't share, the conversation's over. You know that, and I know
mm-hmm.
that, right, Donna?
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely.
So I knew that they put the lid on this case, and nobody talked about it. So every little thing I found out, and I also knew that almost everybody that I was going to talk to somewhere, sometime, had a skeleton hanging in their closet. We
mm-hmm.
all do.
Sure, that's life.
Yes, that is life. And so I had to share about who I was, where I come from, because I was an out-of-towner, but tell them that I was going to be buried in that cemetery and that my relatives actually founded, you know, part of that years ago when the Indians lived there, the Potawatomis. And I said, I'll tell you something, and when I told them something, they would tell me. And then another person, I'd tell them what I found out, and I'd keep them posted. And the more that I told them, the more information I was able to get.
Mm-hmm.
And with that information, we kept a diary. My publicist started writing it down whenever I had a call or she called somebody. That's the way we worked it. And it just like you said at the beginning of this interview, it was like a puzzle. I considered it like a crime puzzle. And each piece was a little lead or something that we had to look at and either get rid of it or go with it. If we heard some kind of rumor where the police says, we don't care about rumors, there's lots of them. Every little rumor I wanted to kill if I could kill it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then get back on track of what was going on. And that's how the case really fell together, where they had enough evidence where the state police finally came forward. There's still people that won't talk. I mean, the sheriff of the town, he's not running again. Other people still won't talk about it. And listen to this. When I drew the map, I told Patty, that's my publicist, I says, you know, Patty, stop at this house here. This is where the passerby went to report the fire. And I said, stop. She said, that's a historical site. I says, I know, but people live there, but stop there. I want to show you something. So she pulled her car over. I said, look over your shoulder. I said, what do you see? She said, pine trees. I can't see. I said, you can't see the people's house, the Shackleys, I call them in the book.
Mm-hmm.
She says, no. I said, well, those pine trees are 60, 70 foot tall now, but back then they were probably 12, and you couldn't have seen then. I said, he stopped here. I said, he didn't go to the house. He stopped here and waited until the fire trucks got on so he could get out of town. And listen to this, Donna. This blows my mind. I've talked, and she talked to this person that lived in this historical house, but you know what? She never said anything. She said, I hope that you'll find it out. We all want it to be solved. I found out after the book was published that she went out and talked to him and knew he stopped there. And so I had people convince her to go to the state police and tell that story. So there's more time. He
mm-hmm.
was there for a while. No way he could have gotten that house.
When you find out things like this, you often wonder how people can live with the awareness that they knew the murderer. They knew that murderer. That was a small town.
Oh, yeah. They all know each
other. Everybody knows everybody. They know all kinds of secrets.
A lot of them's related.
And that is something else. You know, just digressing for a moment, we had 4 police officers murdered here in cold blood by a criminal, obviously,
right.
Here in the area that I live in.
Just really?
Very close by. The guy walked into a place, blew him away. I learned just yesterday that one of the officers that was killed, the only reason that the baristas in this place where they were serving coffee, and they were sitting there just getting their schedules for the day, the only reason they believe the people that witnessed what happened that they didn't get killed is because this one officer managed to get up from the table and put himself between the women that were behind the counter at this restaurant. So the information and it's been shut up real fast, but apparently there were a number of family members that helped this man who murdered in cold blood in front of witnesses four police officers. And there was a manhunt on like you wouldn't believe.
I know. I kept posted on that.
Right. So you have this situation with these family members, and they took him to court for, you know, aiding and abetting a murderer. And this guy had had tremendous history, and yet there were people that still hit him. They still said, yeah, we'll help you, or whatever. And I don't know all of the details on this, because, again, they cut it off real quickly. But the thing is, there is that patterning often with people. Why do you think that it was so... What was it? I mean, were they afraid of the sheriff? What in the world?
Well, here's what it is. Like you say often, and I know better to say always, but in crime, what you just hit on probably... almost always happens. I was watching the History Channel, and that's what happened with Abe Lincoln. That's what happened with, if you want to see this story again, and High Noon, it's the same thing. Nobody talks. That Gary Cooper's all alone. And then Clint Eastwood, one of my favorites, in a town where they call it Helltown, nobody talked. In the case in New York, woman gets raped and killed in Central Park. They look out the window, then nobody comes forward. People, number one, are scared. And number two, they're afraid. I know this is going to sound so weak, but think about this. People, they really worry that they're going to have to go to court. Can you believe that? They don't want to go to court.
Why do you think that aspect of fear is so strong inside them?
Well,
what do you think is really behind it?
And well, in this case, there's two kinds of fear. One is if they had little kids at that time, and now... they don't have little kids, but their little kids now have little kids. So they still probably fear that. And then they're afraid of somebody in the community, because like you said, they all knew each other, they all know each other, that somebody's not going to like them. It's not like in a big city or where there's a lot of people, movement, you tell somebody, you know, I'm sick and tired of you. I don't like what you had to say. I'm through talking with you. In a small town like this, they don't have... a lot of places to go, and the ones they do have, they're all there one time or another.
And
they're looking at each other. And it's just like somebody that they just won't get up. Like, it's different for me as a business person, you as a professional. You'll tell somebody outright what you're thinking about. You won't, you know, be starting a rumor about them or anything like that. That's not the way these rural areas work. They just
Things don't change much, do they?
No, I don't care if I was in Penn County, Indiana, Greene County, Ohio, or Brown County, Indiana, or somewhere in Washington or Oregon. All these little rural towns, they all know each other, and they're very reluctant. They all know everybody knows everybody's business. They all grew up in the same school.
Now, you bring out in your book a wonderful ghost story, and it's about this little girl. You describe how Ray is fishing off the pier early in the morning, and there's a little girl sitting on the edge of a pier, and beside her is a cat.
You're giving me chills. I know that story so well.
Now, that's a true story.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know something? Listen to this. You don't know this. Well, it might be in the book, but right here in my desk drawer, I have one of these felt covered or whatever they call ring cases, and I'm pulling out now a little ring box. A woman, after this investigation, she sent me this little pin, and I'm trying to dig it out. She sent me this little pin, a little they're little, like, what do they call it, safety pins? It's a little gold one where you string little beads on it and everything, and she wore it on her shoe, on her shoelace. And I tell that story, and I tell it in there, and I'm looking at it right now, and I look at it often because this woman said, I've had this. She's in Florida now. She said, I've had this for years, and she says, I want to send it to you. She said, I want you to have it. And I look at this, and I think, why this little girl wore this on her shoelace. You know, she never thought 2 weeks before Christmas somebody was going to choke the life out of her. She never thought that.
Mm-hmm.
It was that had to be one of the most frightening thing for her life to come to an end then. This little girl was well-liked, friendly little girl, only child, and she had some peppiness to her. And when this killer came in, she stood up. And another thing that I'm going to tell you that's not in the book that I found out, and I would tell anybody, but the book's over, but when I went through the photos from the autopsy when they sent them, and this is, I'm telling you right now, that nobody, only, I think maybe less than three people know this, but the killer said she was face down in the bathtub, and I wondered why he would put her back in if he went in there. But the truth of the matter is, I was out at the lake doing some bass fishing, and I told my publicist, I said, when I get back to the office, I said, I want to see that autopsy. I said, there's some photos I want to look at. She says, why? It's been over a year. And I said, because I got a feeling. And I got back on that Monday, and I looked at them, and I said, here it is, Patty. I said, look at this. And there it was. The little girl's not only laying in the bathtub at the wrong end, the faucet end, because we all know when we're little kids, we on the other end, we want to change the water, we use our toes. But she wasn't taking a bath. The shower curtain was in the tub and pulled back. They totally missed it on the investigation. Taking a shower.
Yep. Okay, one of the points you bring out is that the sheriff lied about the state police cold case detectives.
He did.
Because they were never invited in on this murder.
That's how they got him not to run for sheriff again, I believe. I think it was political.
Yeah, it's just, you have all of this information that is here, and it's absolutely amazing. And your ghost story, that where the little girl showed herself to you, and the very item that you pulled out of the box that you were just describing to us that somebody sent you, all of this is just absolutely mesmerizing. You uncovered one lie after the other, and little by little people started coming forth, and you have all of these coincidences, if you will, but you bring out a point that I think is so important, and it happens in media all too many times, and that is wrongful information, false information. And your character Ray says, when false information is repeated over and over and over, then it's accepted. You say it becomes true, but it's accepted it's true. And it's so people think, oh, well, I'll believe in the lie. The reality is, when people know the truth, I don't care what you cloak it in, they still have to live with that awareness.
Oh, you know what? This book has been like things just unfolding. The very end, I say that Trudy Bryce's killer still walks the streets and drives the back country roads of Penn County. He wants to confess, but he can't. The officials of Penn County won't let him. And I say after more than 20 years, now it's 23, Penn County is through talking about Trudy Bryce again. And my thing is, I say, young Trudy's killer still has time to redeem himself. He should step forward and forget about damning advice from the outside and instead do his own soul-searching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody wants this guy to be hanged or fried or the needle or whatever. I want this guy, and I'm as serious as I can be, I would be the first to listen to his story and tell him that he should seek his salvation through Jesus Christ our Lord.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that when you live with this, unless you're really, you've got a twist in your head somewhere, which is quite possible with him, that it's okay to live with it. But once you know you've done something like this, no matter what else you do with your life, there is not the peace. And obviously, there is that influence from the other side because you have been very much driven. You had people give you things, give you all kinds of information where before they wouldn't open up, and the police lied. There was one lie after the other. Forensic evidence was ignored. Again, this is 24 years ago, but it looks like this is going to be a cold case that is going to be solved. What exciting news to find that, one, this is the anniversary of the murder, and two, that on this anniversary, you have been given notification that new witnesses are coming forward. I really think, Thomas Ray Crowell, you have done something exceptional here to help the maybe a spirit of a little girl finally to have rest and maybe to liberate the people of a small town that have carried this burden for so long to be free of it.
Well, thank you.
Now, Thomas, what is your website that people can go to? Is it simple?
Okay. If they can go to my website and they can read the first chapter of this book on, you know, the www's, simpleselling.net.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They can read the first chapter of both my novels. They can purchase this book on Amazon.com, or if they want to get this toll-free number down, right now my publicist tells me that the over in the ordering department of Success Press, this book's on sale for the Christmas season for $10.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So here's a toll-free number I'll give you.
All right.
It's 1-877-999-8466.
877-999-8466,
right.
8466.
Right.
Well, Thomas, you're going to have to send me your next book.
I will do that.
Please do that. The Passerby is incredible. Those of you, if you like good murder mysteries, this is based on fact. It will mesmerize you. You won't be able to put it down.
Tell them not to go to the ending, though. They'll ruin it.
No. Don't read the ending first. Whatever you do, read it from the beginning and read the stuff on the inside flaps. Great stuff. This is Donna Sebo. We've got to take a break. Thomas Ray Crowell was my guest. Call the toll-free number, 877-999-8466, for this special sale, $10 for this wonderful book. Also go to his website, simpleselling.net. We're taking a break. Again, thanks a lot, Thomas, for being with me today. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back.
Thank you.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com. and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-T-A-P TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Here's our toll-free telephone number if you'd like to call in and chat with me. 888-815-9756 is a toll-free number. I know we've got a caller waiting. Quickly, I want to let you know this book called The Passerby that I just did the interview with Thomas Ray Crowell. This man, all of the money from this book is going into a children's charity. And he's offering the book for $10. If you went to Amazon, you couldn't get it for $10. He wants this little girl's story to get out there so that it will be resolved, which I know it will be. And he does know who the killer is. But this is something that is really making a difference. And I would just encourage you, if you want an interesting mystery and you want to have one that is a true cold case, even though it's got a little bit of fiction wrapped around it, you're going to find it absolutely amazing. So call him at 877-999-8466. $10 is all that book will cost. He said, I don't want to make any money on this at all. I want to see this case resolved. So just to pass that information along to you. We've got a caller on the line waiting. Let's show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show. Remember, all you have to do is give me a call at 888-815-9756. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Oh, hi, Donna. This is Linda calling. I'm calling from Florida.
Hi, Linda. How's it in Florida? Toasty, warm?
It's a little chilly today, Donna, and it looks it's a little damp, but compared to other places in the States, I'm not complaining.
What's chilly?
Well, it's for us because it gets so hot. I would say in the 60s, we start bundling up.
Oh my God!
50
degrees. We're down at 19.
But Donna, it gets so hot and humid here that when it's 50 and 60, it's like 30 in the 20s, because we're so used to that's why when there's a temperature drop, it's shocking to all of us, and we're all walking around with colds then, so. Donna, I really need your help on something. My brother's 53. He has cerebral palsy. He moved out of the house in August. He found a woman that proclaimed to love him, which we all can see what is obvious, but he can't see it. And we understand why he left. He wanted to experience a normal life. But my sister went to visit him today, and he's living in despair. Will he continue staying with this woman, or do you see him coming back home?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think that someone needs to talk to your brother, because when someone has had a physical disability, as your brother has experienced for a good portion of his life, the yearning sometimes to have that normal life can blind you to the reality of what you really need to pay attention to. And that's not a put down of your brother. My heart goes out to him because I've seen these things happen many, many times. Your brother has a right to make this choice. I would say that you and your sister need to be able to have some time with him and just tell him you need to know you're loved. If at any time you need to come home, then we'll be here to support you, whatever you want to do. But I'd like for you to consider another option. I would like for you to consider an option that might allow him to maintain what he feels is his own dignity and his own independence. And that is to perhaps find another way where he could be independent and live on his own. Because he's in his 50s, he's 53, He feels like so much of his life has been wasted. And I would like to see your brother have that self-awareness and that sense of self-respect where he will recognize that this situation that he stepped into hasn't been all of the sparkles and champagne that he thought it was going to be. Yet he needs to realize that he does have some choices here. Whether he chooses to stay with this woman or not, he has some choices. And I think you and your sister, if you can give him space, don't pressure him, don't try to make him do anything, but support him and love him and say, we're here for you if you'd like to talk about this sometime. Just let us know. But keep
well,
in
see,
touch
Donna, I'm
with
a
him.
Caretaker. I was his caretaker, Donna. So my sister wasn't that close to him. She went today, and my sister has MS, so she's pretty sick herself. And my brother-in-law was telling me my sister was just sobbing, just mm-hmm. literally sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
This woman is smart enough to know she isolated my brother from me. My brother and I have always been very close, and I've given him a very loving, a well-cared-for home.
I know, honey.
And of course,
I know, but you're not understanding something, and that is your brother is an individual. In his heart of hearts, in the depths of his soul, he wants to be independent. He knows that you cared for him. He's aware of these things, and he sincerely, sincerely hoped that this woman really did love him in a way that would be similar to the way that you loved him, but in a different way, in a personal way.
Yes,
even
I understand that.
Okay, so that's why I'm saying no pressure here. If she was unhappy and she saw things and she was just deeply grieving about this, and your brother-in-law called you and was telling you about it, that's good that you've got that kind of open communication. And what you want to do is just keep tabs with him. But understand, part of what this is that he's trying, he was hoping against
yes.
all odds that he could have some semblance of a relationship with a woman in a real life way. You know, just
You're
because
right.
he has cerebral palsy doesn't mean he doesn't have sexual desires and doesn't fantasize and doesn't have all kinds of different emotions going through him. You're his sister, and it's not the same. And that's
no.
why he wanted to leave, that she's shown herself to be who she really is, and he's seeing it. That is a very sad thing. It's like, gee whiz, I'm
yes.
a fool. And he's not a fool. He is a person
no.
that sincerely, sincerely was thrilled with the opportunity of being able to be this free person. So I'd like some things to be considered that would enable him to have a sense of his own individuality. And that's what he's reaching for, Darren. That's really what he's wanting, Linda, more than anything else in the world as a man, as a human being. Is there...
Oh, you're right, Donna. I knew that. You're right on the money with that. And Donna, I want what he wants. I really want whatever he wants, I want for him. But I was just hoping that maybe you could see that he would move out from her and that he could go anywhere. But this woman, see, my brother doesn't take any drugs. He just takes vitamins. And this woman has been convicted on drugs. My brother-in-law went in the refrigerator and he goes, there was nothing in the refrigerator. He ran to Publix right away, filled up the refrigerator for him. So he's living in despair.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what he wants, but it's just, I'm walking around numb from this, Donna, and I just hope that you can see maybe him, he did tell my brother-in-law, he said, she's using me, I know, he said, so I'm gonna use her. That's what he told my brother-in-law today. So he's starting to see that this woman is just, my brother's just a meal ticket for her.
Well, I know, but again, what's happening here is that if he follows that kind of a route, he's going to lose respect for himself. That's not
I know.
How he has lived his life. So So it might be a good idea if your sister can go visit him and perhaps get him out of the apartment or the house for a while. And if there's a chance that you know of a good therapist that is accustomed to working with people that have cerebral palsy or people of that, you know, of that condition of one level or another, if you could encourage this kind of a communication with someone who is a therapist, I think that there would be another option that would enable your brother to feel like he has a chance at self-respect. And it's better to act sooner rather than later. Do you know of a therapist?
No, but you know what, Donna? I'm going to check because I felt very sad to hear my brother even speak like that because my brother's very loving and kind and intelligent. He's like a completely different personality. I didn't like hearing him say, she's using me and I'm using her.
Mm-hmm.
That's not his style. I'd be in the car with him and he'd see somebody that's physically challenged much better off than he is and he'd say, oh, I feel so sorry for that person. And I would love him when he would say stuff like that. I'm thinking, that is wonderful that you still have compassion for others. You're not just swallowing your own pity because you can't walk.
Okay, I've got to go on a break, hon. Would you stay on the line?
Sure.
Okay, so we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. This is Donna Sebo. If you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. We're talking with Linda in Florida. And Linda, I'm just going to finish up with this, hon. Wanting to say, find someone who is a therapist who perhaps can interact with your brother over a cup of coffee. Because what is being set up here, which is not a good thing, is that your brother is experiencing anger, which that's healthy. He should get angry. Nobody likes being used as a doormat. But if he follows the same route she's following, it's not going to be a happy outcome here, but he needs somebody other than you. He needs someone else that is going to be unbiased, that will be a good listener, and will be able to empower him with an understanding of some options and choices. And then I think there's always going to be good communication between the two of you. But this is a time when there needs to be an awareness that this, he feels, is his last stand of being able to stand on his own two feet in his own way. So I would say honor and respect that, but look for a therapist or someone that can assist him in seeing some options and see how it can go from there. But sooner rather than later. Let's not wait 6 months on this.
I don't know how to see. She even took his cell phone away. This woman is very controlling, Donna. But I'm seeing what you're saying. Maybe I can have my brother-in-law. They live a couple hundred miles away, so it was a big... You know, it was a long trip for them today, and like I said, my sister's not doing too well. But I'm glad that they did what they did today. They took all his clothes from the house today and brought them there. But he didn't want to bring his bedroom set, which I found was good because I think in the back of his mind, he knows he wants to come back home someday. You're exactly right for validation. I had a feeling he feels that his own mortality, and he wants to experience these things before it's his time to go. That's my feeling.
And you're probably very correct with that. But find someone that can talk to him.
Okay.
That's not you.
All right. So, Donna, can you tell me through spirit, do you see him ever coming back home? I don't want him to die in those conditions.
I don't think he'll die in the conditions. About coming home, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
All right, dear. You take care.
Donna. All right, thank you, Donna. Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. This is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I wanted to share a special holiday story with you. It's something my very good friend of mine, Mary Ellen, I participated in her book as well as a number of other people, and it's called A Christmas Filled with Miracles. These are wonderful stories. These are real stories. And I just think it's in the feel of the season, and it's wonderful to share things like this. So that's what I'm going to do with you today. Now, this, I'm reading it exactly. It's 1988. Several of my Marine buddies and I were returning home for the Christmas holidays from Augusta, Georgia, where we had just finished a week of training. We stopped in a small town at a McDonald's restaurant on our way back to Charleston. As we pulled up to the pay window, the clerk was taking an order from a woman in the car behind us. She had requested two Happy Meals. We heard a small voice over the speaker yell, "Mommy, it's our birthday and we want cheeseburgers." The mother's voice was tingling with some embarrassment. She said, "No, all we can afford are hamburgers." The clerk then said, "Happy birthday," to the children and asked if the woman wanted anything else. She replied, "No, we're on our way to Charleston for Christmas to visit the children's grandparents, and we can only afford the two Happy Meals for the twins' fifth birthday." As the clerk at the pay window turned to me to take our money, I asked how much the woman owed for her meals. She told us the total. We paid it and gave her an extra $5 so the woman could purchase a meal for herself. The four of us then each put $10 in a pot and asked the clerk to give it to the woman and tell her the money was for her to purchase something for her and her kids in Charleston the next day. The clerk asked if we knew her, and we replied, "No, it doesn't make a difference. If she asks who it came from, just say the Charleston Marines." We continued on our way and stopped for gas an hour later. A car pulled up behind us, and a woman and two children got out and came over to us. They asked if we were the Charleston Marines who had purchased meals for them. We were all a little embarrassed, but we admitted we were. She thanked us, gave each of us a hug, and asked for our names. We declined. Who we were was not important. When we were getting ready to return to our cars, the young boy walked up to one of the guys, grabbed his trousers, and said, "One day I want to be a Marine." This brought laughter to all, and later it brought tears to our eyes as we thought of what he had said. If anyone had seen all of us standing there, they would have thought we would have known one another for years. Some of us had only been stationed together for a few weeks, and we certainly didn't know the woman and the children. But in the end, we were all members of God's family. This may not seem like a miracle to you, but pretend you're 5 years old and you want cheeseburgers for your birthday. And they suddenly appear. Miracles come to all of us at any age, and kindness seems to be the magical ingredient that heralds them in. Eddie D. Roulet. I think that story is an absolutely fabulous way to end this show. The holidays, there's so much hustle and bustle, and if you're like me, you may not have all your decorations up yet, and you're planning your menus, and you're just involved in all kinds of stuff. Well, remember, the biggest thing about the holiday season is the remembrance of the joy of sharing. We're going to be closing out a year. Before we know it, we're going to be into 2010. But when we're closing out a year, it's important for us to remember that who we are, what we do, it does make a difference. And being thoughtful and being kind and being open to a miracle is part of the joy. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Monday, we're going to be traveling to Australia. Yes, and we are going to find out simply too good to be true. This is Donna Siebel. Talk to you then. Have a magnificent weekend. Have fun wherever you go. And don't forget to smile. People like to see those sparkly teeth of yours. This is Donna. Talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.